It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Just after 5 o'clock on this Thursday, means 5:30 on Thursday. That's when you never read the comments coming up, but it's time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
Top story, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, a classic last night. Tim Bontemps was there for ESPN. Tim, what's up, dude? How are you?
Doing good, Craig. How are you, man?
I'm great. Great to have you back. And I got to start by asking you, where did you take in the final 3 minutes in overtime? Because I was listening to a Zach Lowe's pod, and you had Chris Mannix on. And Mannix said that a lot of folks, and Zach said, a lot of folks abandoned ship with a, you know, somewhere between 3 minutes and a minute to go, went down to the media room. Apparently getting around MSG is real hard from the media seats. Did you get to see the end in the arena, or were you with Mannix and everybody else in the media room going, oh my God, this is happening?
No, I didn't leave my seat. It
there
is
we
a
go.
Pain to get around MSG, but it's not that much of a pain. So I was in my seat till the end of the game. I never leave my seat until the starters are out of the game, if I ever do, and anywhere. And I was in my seat and saw something that I would like to say was totally unbelievable, except the Pacers have made it kind of believable the way they've done it over and over again over the past few weeks in these playoffs.
So the classic sports talk question or sports TV questions, like, did the Knicks choke? Or is this on the Pacers? Do we give them credit? But if we take a rational approach to those questions, what are the things that the Pacers did right to make this comeback happen, and where could the Knicks have prevented it?
Yeah, I was going to say, to have something like this happen, Craig, it's all the above, right? There were some bad calls by the refs both ways throughout the game. That certainly played a part in this. The Knicks had some disastrous things happen in the final few minutes in overtime. Obviously, the three missed free throws from OG Anunoby and Karl Towns were critical. Some very careless turnovers, flinging the ball all over the place, early calling of timeouts, leaving them without any timeouts. It's been a very consistent theme of these Pacers comebacks, right? You have teams calling these timeouts before they try to inbound the ball, burning them early, and then they don't have them late, and they can't get the ball in, and they throw a crazy pass. And then Indiana, look, I mean, obviously Aaron Nesmith was 7-for-8 from three in the game in regulation and was insane in the fourth quarter. The Pacers couldn't miss down the stretch. Their relentless pace and energy throughout the game is draining on opponents. We've seen this happen time and again. And look, they also just got lucky, right? Like, they got lucky on, I think you could argue that they had two 50-50 calls on these challenges that both broke in their favor. They obviously couldn't miss a shot. The Knicks, Karl Towns, one of the best shooters in the league, he misses two free throws. Like, all of these things had to happen to have the Pacers have a chance to win. And that's before you even get to the crazy Halliburton shot that, you know, popped up in the air like Don Nelson shot, you know, 50-some years ago for the Celtics and finally fell through the basket, right? Like, all these things together were required to have this thing come off the way it did. And it's also why, despite the fact the Knicks are down 0-1 in the series, as long as they come back and win game two, which I expect them to tomorrow night, I actually came away from that game overall feel pretty good about where the Knicks are at, because there were a lot of good things that happened for them to build that 15-point lead or 17-point lead they had in the fourth quarter. And I think that's probably the bigger takeaway for me from the game than the Pacers pulling off a frenetic comeback in terms of where the series should be able to go from here.
Tim Bontemps, ESPN NBA reporter with us here on the Hoffman Show. A lot to unpack there. I want to start with the timeouts and the Thibodeau part of this, because not only are the Knicks burning timeouts before being able to get the ball inbounds, Tibbs uses a challenge very early in this game. And we've seen this now, multiple coaches in these playoffs be stuck late, unable to challenge calls, where you see Carlisle save. There's a couple opportunities potentially for him to challenge stuff earlier throughout the game. He saves him for late. He has a huge one with 30 seconds to go, and then another one with 20 seconds to go in overtime. As you talk to folks around the league, Tim, is that something where coaches are just like, I gotta ignore my players early. I gotta ignore my own instincts early and save it no matter what? Or is there any, like, is there merit to an early challenge if it's not poorly spent? Because I think that's the other part of the Tibbs thing yesterday is, like, it was a bad challenge. That call was never getting overturned.
But yes.
strategically, like, what's the bigger issue? The miss on the likelihood of getting it right or the overall strategy of just you got to eat it early and save it for the end?
I mean, it's not really a question you can answer like that, right? Because a lot of it comes down to the value add of the challenge, right? Like, if it's the first quarter and you're guaranteed to get a possession because, like, they missed, let's just say it's Aaron Nesmith. Aaron Nesmith hits the ball out of bounds, like, throws the ball out of bounds with his hand. They give it to the Knicks or give it to the Pacers, right? Some would argue, I think fairly, that if you are guaranteeing yourself an extra possession in the game, I mean, look, that became a one-possession game last night, right? If you guarantee yourself an extra possession and you score, that could be the thing that wins you a game. Obviously, if you're taking points off the board, for sure, or putting points on the board, for sure, there's also a lot of merit in challenging earlier in the game. If it's like you feel extremely confident you're going to win, and it's either going to be erasing a three-shot foul or picking up a two- or three-shot foul. Again, if you're putting points on or off the board, I think most, you know, analytically from whether you should use it or not, most people would say it's probably good to use it. I think you're right, Carlisle waiting. It certainly paid off for him last night. He won a couple of 50-50 calls that both of them, I thought, were fine for Indiana to win, but certainly would have been fine if the Knicks won them. And yeah, I think the bigger issue was that what you cannot do in the playoffs is burn a challenge on a play you're not going to get overturned. And for the vast majority of the time, if there's contact by two players and you're asking the official to say they're wrong, they're not going to say they're wrong. Because in a lot of ways, like, just truthfully, they're not wrong, right? Like, yeah. On that play, Jalen Brunson got into it with Aaron Nesmith. You easily could have called a foul on Aaron Nesmith, but Jalen Brunson was pushing off him also. So there's not really a reason for them to change that call. And there wasn't enough of a value add there for the Knicks to me to do it, especially because 2 minutes later, because the argument immediately is, well, it's Jalen Brunson's third foul. Well, five possessions later, maybe Clarice Halliburton comes down, kicks his leg out, clearly kicks Jalen Brunson, shoots the ball, gets Jalen Brunson called for his fourth foul. And if the Knicks had challenged that one, they automatically would have overturned it. Right? Because you kick your leg out, you create contact. That's an offensive foul on Tyrese Halliburton. And then maybe Jalen Brunson doesn't have five fouls in the fourth quarter and overtime of this game. And maybe Jalen Brunson isn't playing Matador defense, trying not to foul out of the game in the fourth quarter and overtime of this game. Right? So, again, that's where, to me, it's less about the specifics of should you just never challenge at all and wait for the final 30 seconds. But what you can't do is have a bad one and burn a timeout and lose the ability to do it again, because that's where they come back to haunt you. And I certainly think it came back to haunt the Knicks last night.
Tim Bontemps, ESPN, with us here on the Hoffman Show, talking about game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. So to circle back to your larger point, Tim, you come out of this game encouraged by the Knicks because they were up by that six, like, in order to blow a 16-point lead or a 14-point lead or a 9-point lead, you got to be up by that with those times to go. Why, like, I guess if I'm going to counter you, right, just for play devil's advocate, it's a 48-minute game. We know the Pacers wear teams down. And we saw even in the Knicks-Celtics series, like, the Celtics had multiple leads. The Knicks came back and were like, they can't possibly do this again. And they kept doing it again and again. Why do you think the Knicks have the fortitude here to survive what will probably be a final push in all of these games by the Pacers? Because that's how the Pacers are built.
Well, the Knicks are a very mentally tough team, and they've been great in the clutch all year. I mean, they have the clutch player of the year on their team in Jalen Brunson, right? So I'm not going to say, well, the Knicks just don't know how to play in the clutch anymore because they had one disastrous game against a team that's been very good at doing this over and over again, right? The other thing I would say is that if you look at the last minute report just came out for this game, which I'm sure is going to be a doozy.
Yeah, I'm sure it's long as well. And put the goaltend in overtime on there and all that.
I would suspect it is quite long. But if you, to me, I came into the series with a few major pivot points to really watch in terms of how this was going to go, right? One was, are the Pacers going to be able to stop Jalen Brunson? The only person who stopped Jalen Brunson in game one were the referees, right? The Pacers had no prayer of stopping Jalen Brunson. Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard are terrific players. defensively, they could not guard Jalen Brunson. I don't really see any way that's going to change. The Pacers don't have different players they could put on them. Brunson's very comfortable against those guys. He was awesome against them last year in the playoffs. I think if he's healthy, he's going to put up big numbers in the series. Karl Towns versus Miles Turner. Karl Towns destroyed Miles Turner. Miles Turner was not even a factor in the game. Thomas Bryant was in the game in the fourth quarter. Miles Turner wasn't playing. So Miles Turner can hit shots. He's had a really good playoffs. But I think that's a very good matchup for Karl Towns. He was great in game one. Yes, I know he missed the free throws late. But he, I think, is going to get open, clean looks from the perimeter. I think that matchup, there's a lot of reason to think the Knicks continue to win that. And then Mitchell Robinson came in off the bench and absolutely destroyed Indiana on the boards, just like he did against Boston in the first round, and was wreaking havoc with them the entire game. And they have, again, the Pacers don't have any size. They have nobody to contend with Mitchell Robinson inside. So, again, yes, the Pacers can hit a ton of shots. Yes, they play a frenetic pace. But, again, do I think Aaron Nesmith is going 7-for-8 from three every game and hitting 6 threes in the fourth quarter, which no one had ever done in the history of the league before? No, I don't think it's going to happen 4 out of 7 times. So, yes, Indiana could definitely win the series. I thought it was going to be Knicks in 7. Certainly blowing a game like this at home is a devastating thing to do. But I expect the series is going to be 2-2 after 4. And I think overall, if you come out of this, I think if you're a Knicks fan or if you're the Knicks organization, you can point to a lot of things and say these things that were sort of key things to watch coming into the series all look pretty comfortably in New York's favor after the first game. And there's not a lot of things I'd point to for Indiana and say there's a reason why it should be different. And that's why I would say that it should carry over. But your devil's advocate point about the Boston series is exactly right, because that was the weirdest series I've ever covered. And the Knicks were down by 15 or more in the first 5 games, and they won 3 of them. Yeah. So, you know, like, who knows with the way these playoffs have gone, how this thing is going to go over the next couple of weeks.
And we see weird stuff happen. I mean, you know, the 3-1 year where Golden State blows the finals lead.
Yeah.
This is the same year they were up 3 or down 3-1 against Oklahoma City. So, like, the ping pong nature of it all is bizarre sometimes in the NBA playoffs, actually often in the NBA playoffs, which leads to my last question for you, Tim. Tim Bontemps, ESPN with us. So, I felt last night watching on TV, and you will have a much better sense, one, having covered multiple conference finals over your career, and two, having been in the building. But watching on TV, I had this sense of like, oh, these two teams are comfortable. Like, they know each other. They played each other in the playoffs. There's all this history. And unlike a lot of times in conference finals, when you have teams that haven't been there before, there wasn't the nervous energy I sensed it going through that game one. Eventually, the reality that this is the conference finals is going to hit. And there's going to be a crank of, like, the screws are going to get tightened. When that happens, are you more confident in one side or the other? And also, you know, is the premise of that is the premise of that correct in that question?
I don't know. I mean,
felt different.
I just don't really. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think at this point in the season, I don't really think that's the case. And you've got, on all these teams, you've got guys who have, you know, between Anthony Edwards and Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Haliburton and Chigo Saksa, I mean, any of these teams at the end of the season, you've got guys that can step up and make massive plays in big spots, right? And I don't think – you don't make it to the conference finals by accident. So, yeah, I don't – I think it's just –
I guess I just look at teams like, you know, when Memphis played Golden State or even Boston a couple years ago in the finals against Golden State. And there just seemed to be a know-how for those Warriors teams, for some of the teams that have that championship pedigree. And because these teams have never played in the finals, and neither of them have, where it's not a team that's been there versus a team that hasn't, it does, to me, the tenor of it felt a little bit different last night. But also, I'm watching it on TV, you're there, and you've also covered these things in person.
I don't think, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and I think it's a reasonable question, but no, I don't think, I didn't feel that in the game. And like, look, I mean, again, if the reason this is interesting to me is that the Pacers have now done this exact same thing 3 times in 3 series, and it basically had never happened before besides that.
Yeah.
So how in the world do they keep doing it? Like, I think that is fascinating. But no, I didn't think that, like, the Knicks got in the moment and, like, melted down. You know? Like, I just think the Pacers did a bunch of crazy things in a good way in a row, and the Knicks did a bunch of crazy bad things in a row. And, you know, like, yes, the Warriors found a way to win games like that. The Warriors are also a dynastic team, right? Like, you can always go back and look at dynastic teams and say, oh, yeah, the Jordan Bulls or the Kobe Shaq Lakers when they came back from down 15 against Portland in that, I think it was game 7 in the first year they won the title, right? Like, you think back on that now, it's like, oh, yeah, of course Kobe and Shaq found a way to come back. But, like, at that point, they hadn't won anything yet, right? Like, they were playing this Portland team with Scottie Pippen and all these vets and were supposed to be great. And, you know, they found a way to win. And, like, it's easy to sort of retrofit that kind of stuff onto teams. But I think with the four teams we've got in the conference finals this year, despite the fact that they don't have finals experience among them, you've got a lot of teams that are very comfortable in late and close situations, have had a lot of success in them. And I just thought it was a great basketball game last night that led to a truly unbelievable ending.
No doubt about it. And you got another, hopefully, great game tomorrow. Tim Bontemps on the scene in New York for ESPN covering the Eastern Conference Finals. Tim, where can people go? Obviously, ESPN.com for anything written. You're doing Winhurst Pod and all that kind of stuff. Where else can people find what you're doing?
Yeah, doing me, Brian, and Tim McMahon are on the Hoop Collective three times a week. Just got done recording the first half of it, the other half of it after tonight's game for tomorrow morning. Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And, writtenwork.com.
Showing up on TV.
Obviously, I'll be on TV. I'll be on TV plenty all day tomorrow ahead of what should be a hell of an atmosphere at the Garden as the Knicks try to even this thing up.
No doubt about it. Tim, appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Anytime, Craig. Thanks for having me, man. Talk soon.
Indeed. That's Tim Bontemps with us here on The Hoffman Show. And, Anthony, I'm not totally sure that I did a great job asking that last question because – like, to me, it's not about, like, did that stuff happen last night? It's, like, is the pressure going to crank as the series moves forward? I actually feel like last night felt like just another really intense, good basketball game between two teams with elevated stakes. But it's not like the, oh, this is the Eastern Conference Finals and a trip to the NBA Finals is on the line yet. But, and I don't know whether that I asked that by the very well by the way that Tim answered it. But... I'm definitely curious to see, because I do think it's very easy and very lazy just to be like, oh, the Knicks melted down. The Knicks, how could they possibly have done that? The Knicks blew it. I don't think the Knicks blew it. I think the Knicks made mistakes, but you make mistakes in basketball. It's not a mistake-free game. I credit the Pacers for doing hitting crazy shots and Aaron Nesmith losing his mind more than I do anything else.
Yeah, I mean, also, I just feel like the Pacers, they were there last year. Or was that 2 years ago?
Last year.
Yeah,
because they beat the Knicks to get there.
So I think they understand, you know, the gravity of the moment. And then with the Knicks, it's more so like, I think they're led and spearheaded by Jalen Brunson, and he's been in so many winning moments. Like, he's won at every level of his career except the NBA level. So I think, you know, this is just another situation where he just doesn't flinch. And I think, you know, the rest of the Knicks rally around him. So, again, like, things didn't go their way down the stretch of the game, but I think they're going to be able to bounce back. I would not be surprised if they go out there and just dominate the Pacers tomorrow. Like, I think that's what kind of – just because they realized, like, they really let one get away.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there are guys with championship experience on these teams. And while it's not a ton and these teams haven't been through these moments together, the Knicks have OG Anunoby, who won with the Raptors. His teammate was Pascal Siakam. On the Thunder, they have another one of the Raptors. Who do they have? Blanken. They've got someone who's won one, I'm pretty sure. And then the Timberwolves have someone as well, and I'm blanking on who it is. But, like, there are some guys who have been, like, someone else was a role player on, the, I think, the Bucks championship team that's on one of these teams, and my brain scrambled right now, and I'm only thinking of the two
Caruso's
guys.
Caruso's won one.
Yeah, Caruso with the Lakers. There's the Oklahoma City guy, and Minnesota's got someone. So there are players that have won championships on these teams, but these teams have not been through that experience together. And so as things get tight, and as you have to make adjustments and, like, do playoff things, how do these teams handle it? You know, not just from, like, a pressure, do they melt mentally standpoint, But like, how do they execute? Because that's feeling pressure too. Is like, how do you execute in the biggest moments? Can you keep calm and do the things you got to do? When you're Carl Towns and you've hit 90% of your free throws in the playoffs, missing too late, these things happen. But if they happen multiple times, what do we say? Once is a coincidence, twice is a something else, three times is a trend.
Yep.
Well, I was hoping you'd fix the analogy. Two.
Once is a fluke. Twice is a coincidence.
There we
Three
go.
Times is a trend.
That's what we're looking for.
Or not make it a standard.
Yeah, well, we'll see how game two goes in just a few days. Actually, tomorrow. And Bon Temps will be there. Thanks again to Tim for joining us. When we get back, comment section time. It's never read the comments here on The Hoffman Show.